it's Andrew Bogish from CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to The Whole Show on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back to The Whole Show. We're live from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Joining me now on our First Advantage Hotline, we're talking to Ben Golliver, a Washington Post NBA writer, but also put together this extremely interesting book, Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. Ben, man, thanks so much for giving us some time today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I mean, this was a pet project of mine for, you know, almost a year of my life, living in Disney World for 93 days and getting home and immediately trying to document the whole thing for history. So I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, this is what you said it best, document this whole thing for history. Where will this whole bubble ball experience go down? I mean, in 20 years, are we going to go, oh, that was that weird year the Lakers won this thing? This is going to be one of those moments in sports history that just lives on for a very long time. And I think vividly, too. I think we'll all tell stories of what we saw from the outside, but especially yourself from what you witnessed inside.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even step back from the bubble, I think 2020 is going to be one of the biggest years in NBA history. When you look at the Hong Kong controversy, David Stern's death, Kobe Bryant's death, the pandemic shutting the season down, and then, of course, trying to bring everything back together in the bubble, it's just going to be one of those years like when Magic showed up in 1980 or the 1992 Dream Team or the LeBron era begins in 2003 that people are going to circle and say that was kind of a turning point. Of course, there was a social justice angle with the presidential election. There was also a big-time sports business angle with billions of dollars being lost because of the pandemic. But there was also just the quirkiness of the bubble, right? What a weird thing to have all these Hall of Famers going down to Disney World, kind of staying in hotel rooms that would usually be for, like, you know, Midwesterners driving down in their minivans to go get a summer break week, right? And, you know, now LeBron's in there, and now guys like me are in there trying to document the whole thing. It was just crazy. The main takeaway from the bubble is just that it went so fast. There was so much going on. And yet, of course, there was a Groundhog Day element to it as well, where it was really grinding you down. So I tried to capture both of those elements as well, just the amount of sensory overload, but then also just the kind of stasis that we all felt being here in the pandemic.
I think you did a great job of, because you outlined this from your perspective. Yes, you're reporting on the facts, the things that went inside the bubble, but you're very much taking us in. I felt like I was almost there with you. From even the moment, Ben, when you received the note that, I mean, only a select few media members got to go inside the bubble, your story was interesting from the get-go because you were in, maybe you were out, then you were back in.
Oh, yeah, I had some health complications, you know, where I was, you know, kind of finally approved basically less than 24 hours before I could go down there. And I was already nervous about it. You know, I'm thinking, look, I live this easy life in L.A. I get my groceries delivered. You know, I don't really have too much to worry about. Now you're talking about going down to a bubble environment where there's 350 players. Hey, if one guy wants Postmates or one guy wants to go to a strip club and not tell anybody or one guy wants to have an overnight visitor in his room, uh-oh, does that put me at risk? And so there was a lot of nerves going into that process, but I chose to write it first person because I felt like I won the golden ticket, right? I felt like I was sitting courtside like Rihanna and Jack Nicholson watching an NBA Finals run, and it was just such a unique experience. I'm a lifelong basketball fan. I know there's a lot of people out there like that. So I just wanted the reader to kind of come along with me through the highs and lows, the nervous parts, but also the exciting parts. I mean, towards the end of the book, you know, LeBron, they're celebrating the title. They've got no one to celebrate with because it's an empty arena. So they decide to turn the champagne bottles on guys like me, and I get soaked head to toe in their title celebration. And, you know, it's one of those things where, again, it's like, you know, Willy Wonka or something, this golden ticket idea of, like, when is this ever going to happen? You know, it's a once-in-a-generation, once-in-a-lifetime type thing.
We're talking to Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, wrote Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season, available now, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, where you can get books. I have a copy here sitting right with me. I'm about 80% of the way done, Ben, and I'm a slow reader, but I'm thoroughly entertained. Of course, here in Colorado, we love the portion about the Nuggets, and I want to get into some of that, too, because history was made inside that bubble. But I think when you think about, oh, they're going to arrange the bubble, they're going to get teams over there, the casual fan just kind of like, okay, they're going to do it, they're all millionaires getting into this. Can you talk to us about how complex the situation really was? I mean, in one chapter, the final pitch, talking about everything they had to navigate through to ultimately get this tournament essentially into Disney World.
Well, look, there was a big-time battle between personal freedom and health and safety, right? Like, we didn't really have privacy in the bubble. I was wearing a device that tracked me around everywhere I went. If I got too close to people, it would start beeping. I had an electronic bracelet that was my way to get into my hotel room, but that also tracked my movement around campus. I had to wear a mask. I had to wear a credential at all times. There was physical barriers, so we could not leave the campus. The only transportation were charter buses to and from the arenas, and the players had to deal with all this stuff as well. You know, one moment I'll never forget when they had the shutdown, the Bucks decided not to take the court. It was like the first time all the players had been able to really catch their breath the entire experience, but there was nothing to do. So, you know, I saw Kawhi Leonard, one of the biggest stars in the game, grabs a golf cart and just starts doing 360s in this empty parking lot like a 75-year-old senior citizen, you know, because there's literally nothing else out there for people to do. And so it was very challenging, and it was very tough on the players. But here's the thing. Ultimately, all the sacrifices were worth it. Nobody got sick. There wasn't a single positive test, and they crowned a champion. This is year number 74 for the NBA last year. If they had a blank spot on that record book, to me, that's a real black eye. You know, it just hits you in the gut. And instead, you know, you have this amazing accomplishment where they spent $200 million to save the season.
Yeah, no question about it when you think about the process. But, you know, this was such an up and down journey to get there. Once you're there, like you brought up with Milwaukee's situation, with what was going on in the country outside of the bubble. I mean, as you said, 2020, a year to remember for the good, the bad, and the extremely ugly. There were so many things going on in our world politically with social justice, too. And of course, Milwaukee, I love how you outlined leading up to when Milwaukee decided not to play in that playoff game and what that ultimately led to, man. I mean, it was so interesting how you outlined it and how the media was kind of treated around that process.
Well, I was one of only three reporters who was there for tip-off, right? I love watching the Bucks because I love Giannis. I think he's one of the most important figures in the NBA in the 21st century just because of his global reach. And, you know, I got to the arena, I sit down, I look around, wait a minute, there's only one team here. So I start to go on a reconnaissance mission to try to figure out where are these guys. And, you know, I take it through step by step in the book, but we were staking out that locker room for hours waiting for these guys to come out and explain their thought, explain why they shut things down and explain what they wanted to do next. I mean, that was a crazy time period. The next few days, Chris Paul and LeBron James are calling Barack Obama for advice. Michael Jordan's getting involved with the owners' negotiations. I mean, they really had to put this whole thing back together. And it all started with that decision not to take the court, which caught everybody by surprise. I'll always say it. I mean, the most memorable playoff game I've ever been to was the one that didn't take place, the one they didn't play.
What was that like to know? I mean, let me rephrase that. Did you think we were going to resume play in the bubble once all that went down?
I did, because there was so much money at stake. You know, if those guys walked away, not only is the $200 million gone for how much they spent to build the bubble, but the collective bargaining agreement for next year is probably gone too, because the owners at that point say, look, these losses are just too big. You know, we've got to figure something else out. We're going to make a new deal. And they had the right to do that because the pandemic, you know, qualified as like an act of God, so they could cancel the contract if they wanted to. So I knew they were going to get back out there. It was only a matter of time.
How do you think they pulled this thing off? I mean, was it ultimately the most successful? I mean, obviously a boycott, but then you're drawing attention to social issues. Everyone's talking. On a scale from 1 to 10, how successful was the bubble experiment, if we want to call it that?
I'd say 10 out of 10. I mean, the quality was really high. The play on the court, you know, guys didn't have to travel. They were really, really locked in playing great basketball. They kept everybody safe. They crowned the champion. They accomplished all their goals. Now, could they have done it a little bit quicker so they didn't have to compete from a rating standpoint, you know, with the NFL and baseball playoffs? I mean, maybe that would have been helpful. More people would have watched the finals. But, I mean, I think they came, they saw, they conquered. And, look, it was tough. I mean, nobody wanted to do it again, right? But as a one-time experiment to kind of save a season, keep the league on track, and crown a champion, I thought they nailed it. I came away blown away and very impressed. And I went in super skeptical. I wasn't even sure they were going to make it halfway through. I actually brought a pair of Jordans that are called the Playoffs. And I said I wouldn't wear them until we actually made it to the playoffs. And I was thinking, oh, there's like maybe an 80-20 shot that I actually get to wear these sneakers, right? And I bought some suits for the finals. And I said, oh, there's probably a 50-50 chance I ever get to wear these. And sure enough, I got to wear both. And it was great.
We're talking to Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, of course, an NBA writer. But more importantly, today we're talking about bubble ball inside the NBA's fight to save a season. Well, us here in Colorado, I mean, it was a magical bubble for Nuggets fans. It felt like Denver was done in that first series against Utah. They're down 3-1. You're thinking, all right, the Nuggets are toast. They're ready to go home. Something clicked. They turned it on. They did it again against the Clippers.
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, six straight games elimination and they don't go home anytime. I mean, imagine the mental fortitude. Anytime guys got to that, kind of crossroads moment, do I have to stay here in the bubble or do I get to go home? A lot of teams folded. You know, Houston folded, the Sixers folded, the Clippers folded, and the Nuggets just did it. They just kept going and going and going. It's a credit to Jamal Murray, who was just playing out of his mind for a month straight, and also to Jokic. You know, on this point about Jokic, I want to make this very clear. He's obviously the MVP for this season. There's no question about it. There is no debate. He is the MVP. He needs to start getting mentioned in the best player in basketball conversations, too. Don't, like, couch this by saying, oh, it's only a one-year thing. This guy's been a monster now for, like, three or four straight years. I think he's the best passer in the game at this point. He's right in his prime. He's durable. I understand there's some defensive concerns, but he's not as bad as his reputation. He kind of gets thrown around. And offensively, he's the number one guy to want to start a team with at this point, unless LeBron James can get his ankle healthy, because he just makes all of his teammates better. So I just think that's very important. Don't just make this a one-year thing in the conversation. Start talking about this guy as arguably the best player in the sport.
Ben, you got a lot of Nuggets fans just cheering right now, man. They want to hear national media talk about it. So thank you for that. Talking about the Joker, man. I mean, that's something we've been harping on forever.
And I promise I'm not pandering, man. I just love this guy's game, everything about it. People actually tell me I kind of look like him. I got a smaller head and a smaller nose, same haircut. So maybe there's an affinity there. But I just, everything about him, that's how you play basketball the right way. You make your teammates better. I call it the halo effect, and he's got one of the biggest halos in the league.
Hey, Ben, let me ask you, side note here. Why do you think sometimes the national media has a hard time getting behind a guy like the Joker?
Well, he doesn't like the interviews, man. He's got to go to some press conference training, I think. You know, he's so dry, and he's pretty quick with his comments, and he doesn't want to pound his own chest, and I think it's just tricky. I would encourage him to step up and tell his own story as much as he can. Maybe have somebody manage a social media account for him. But guys like Michael Malone and Jamal Murray do a great job of singing his praises. And, look, that's a pretty easy choir to join. You know, I'll join that choir, too. It's nothing but rewarding to be able to talk about Joker.
We're talking to Ben Golliver of the Washington Post, and we're talking about bubble ball inside the NBA's fight to save a season. A lot of talk before the bubble, during the bubble, after the bubble, was that there was going to be this asterisk next to the Lakers or the entire season. Do you put one there?
No. Underline it, exclamation point, no. The Lakers went 16-5. They beat a lot of good players. Their guys were the two best guys in the bubble, LeBron and Anthony Davis, the whole way through. And I would just point to how these other teams responded to the bubble. It was validating, right? If you don't think the bubble counts, you don't go out there and make major moves during the offseason. Philly, the Clippers, Houston, Milwaukee all made big-time moves. That told me all I needed to know. That title counts, and it should be remembered like that forever. It was very hard. LeBron likes to say it's one of his toughest achievements. 2016 was better. There's no question. I mean, Golden State was such a tough opponent, but the bubble's right up there, too, probably in second place for his titles.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. It was so – we talked to several reporters that actually said something similar. It's the opposite. We're going to reward this one more because of what they went through physically and mentally. You talked about that. We're familiar with Yusuf Nurkic. You're extremely familiar with Nurkic with your work with the Blazers. He went through a lot of stuff mentally, losing his grandma to COVID. We talk about Kevin Love. You documented that as well with what he experienced mentally. It wasn't just the physical thing. It was the mental health aspect, being so far away. You experienced this personally, being so far away from your loved ones, being cut off.
Yeah, I didn't even have to play, and it was really stressful. You know, I put on weight. I wasn't sleeping very well. I was feeling isolation from my parents. I mean, all of it just added up to a very, very tough and challenging experience. And that's why I think, you know, if you weren't there, don't judge or try to put these guys down. I mean, the lack of travel was a benefit, no question. Everybody enjoyed being in that single site location, but this was still grueling stuff day after day, trying to stay focused. And it caught up to me for sure. And I know it caught up to a lot of the players.
Ben, last one for you. You mentioned the boycott side of things, but what was the one thing perhaps that stood out to you? Was it that process leading into it? What was that number one thing when you walked away that's going to be just like burned in your brain forever?
Well, on the court, for sure, it would be the boycott. I mean, that was just the most memorable kind of, most talked about moment of the entire experience. I mean, it's on the front page of every newspaper. It's leading all the news stations. I'll just remember the campus, though, because there was no tourists. It's so empty. You had all these animals, like, taking back over control of the swamp of Disney World, you know? I saw so many alligators, armadillo, deer. I mean, all this stuff you would not expect to see on this campus. And so, you know, for me, as somebody from Oregon who really likes the outdoors, it was just trippy. You know, it was like, here they are coming to reclaim the kingdom, you know, the Magic Kingdom, if you will.
Ben, you could have made a movie while you were down there, too, man. You got the book, of course. You could threw that camera up. You could have had a movie.
Well, hey, look, if you want to be my agent, you know of anybody in Hollywood, just let me know, all right? We will figure it out.
All right, my friend Ben. We'd love to get you on at some point again down the road. I would love to pick your brain about all things basketball. It's a sensational read. I'm going to probably finish it this week. I really, really recommend it. What a crazy time. What an interesting time in our lives, not just sports history, but history overall. And you documented it perfectly, my friend.
Well, I appreciate that so much, man. Take care, and I wish all the best to the Nuggets fans. It's going to be a fun playoff run, man. I think they're going to be making some noise.
This Western Conference is intense. We'll see how it all wraps up. Ben Golliver, thank you so much, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, man. Take care.
All right, Ben Golliver, Washington Post, NBA writer. The book is Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season. That's a crazy thing, right? In Disney World, like, the animals just start taking over. It's like Walking Dead. I didn't want to say that to Ben there, but my goodness, that's kind of what I'm picturing. Like, suddenly the animals are just starting to take over. What a crazy time. He was away. He was inside that thing for 93 days, him personally. You know, we talk about the basketball, and we do talk about, well, they're making money to do it. And that's true. They're all making damn good money. But, I mean, Yusuf Nurkic, he's inside the bubble, loses his grandmother. And Nurkic is extreme. We learned this when he was a Nugget. Extremely close to his family. You know, they would come to games. They'd fly and come to games and stuff. And Nurk had a tough time. This big brute of a man, Ben Golliver documents that in the book, that he just is a completely different guy. He shut off. These guys are still people, you know, and they're asked to be away from their family for a very long time. And then, you know, again, whether you want to get into the political aspect, agree or disagree, you guys know my thoughts on that. I really like being, as a fan, being able to check my brain off. But, there was a lot going on in this world. They debated whether they wanted to play at all. Then they do play. A lot of other stuff continues to happen. They boycott. It's not happening for a while. Then it comes back and it happens, and you're still wondering if it's going to happen. You got players skipping out and going, remember the strip club, going there. Well, crazy times. The bubble was nuts. And I think, you know, we talk about it specifically when it comes to Jamal Murray. Oh, but Jamal Murray, a star, was born inside that bubble. And that was something we glom onto here. But this whole thing, if you think about it, how much is it? $200 million to put this whole thing on in what, 2 months? We didn't think it was going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen until they arrived. Then they arrived, and it felt like this strange, I don't know, that we're basically watching a bunch of NBA players go to basketball camp. That's what I kind of felt like. They're all staying at the same hotels. They can't leave their rooms. I mean, if you're listening to the show and you went to basketball camps in high school or college, whatever, you weren't allowed to leave your room past curfew. You were shut down. These guys were locked up. They were not able to do anything. And I thought this was interesting, too, in the book. Ben talks about it and says the players weren't allowed to bring their chefs, right? And most people like us read that and go, oh, give me a break. These are giant men that are on a strict diet for the most part. Like, they are on a strict diet. And do they absolutely know what everything they eat? No, they have a guy that does all of that for them so they could be in tip-top shape. And then was it Joel Embiid takes a picture of their food, and it was like, you know, piece of chicken, salad, and like, I don't remember what else. And I'm thinking, well, that's awesome for me, but I'm 5'10 and a half, 173. You know, I'm not 7 foot, 253 pounds. So, I mean, those were weird adjustments, but that was just one little thing. All these things stick out that we don't really think about. In order to be a highly trained athlete, finely tuned and playing, I mean, yeah, maybe it sounds like privilege as far as their money goes and stuff. LeBron has a hyperbaric chamber. that he's in. But Tom Brady will tell you, all those things allow him to play into his 40s. And they didn't have it for the 93 days. Those things, they didn't have the boost from their family. They talked to him, Zoom and all that stuff. But Lord knows, we've all been on enough of those Zoom meetings now, and that doesn't do the trick, especially when it comes to your family. I think about being away from my wife and my kid. I can't do a night. Imagine those days. Well, Brady, if you were paid that much, we've actually had that debate. Would you be away from your family for 93 days for $1 million? And that's 93 days you're never going to get back. And as a father, it's absolutely no. I can barely do a day. 35 minutes after the hour, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, let's get the we'll talk more about his interview. I thought that was fantastic. But let's also talk about, a little bit about on the Broncos and some more on the Denver Nuggets and last night and this Western Conference and how interesting it ultimately is going to get. But first, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.